You are listening to Arise, Actualize Your Spiritual Potential, Lessons from the Bhagavad Gita, Part 5, The Essence of the Spiritual Life.
I like to begin this message today with a verse from the Christian scriptures, from the New Testament, the Bible, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully, just as I also have been fully known. We have this promise of spiritual awakening in which we are able to see the truth clearly. We have in the Bhagavad Gita a journal of the seeking soul's journey from a crisis of faith to the fulfillment in divine love. Now, remember we have Arjuna, who is an accomplished warrior who plays the part of the seeking soul, the one looking for guidance from the higher self, and we have Krishna playing the role of the divine self, the higher true self, and there is a dialogue that ensues between the two when Arjuna comes to a moment of crisis in his life, which begins the Bhagavad Gita. So what is the crisis? Well, the crisis is that Arjuna is highly competent. He's accomplished, he's successful, he's learned, he's practiced, but what he knows, what he has learned, what he has always done, doesn't work anymore. In the situation that he is facing, he doesn't know what to do. So this is that moment of crisis. Can you relate? The time in your life you feel like, well, I've handled it all so far, but this one stumps me. So what does he do? He turns to God, and the inquiry begins. And this inquiry and this dialogue between the higher true self is what ensues then in the dialogue known as the Bhagavad Gita, or the Song of God. And it is the journey of a soul's transformation from a time of crisis in faith to living in love. As we go through chapter by chapter, we see that Arjuna, the seeking soul, is given the keys to being able to be open to divine guidance. And these keys are how to get beyond mental restlessness, how to quiet the mind so that he is able to perceive the still small voice of inner guidance. His inner knowing may become accessible to him. He has an intellectual grasping of the wisdom that's being revealed, an intuitional sense of it, and then we come upon where we are today, that he wants direct experience. And this is what happens in chapter 11 of the Gita. And I want to share with you a little bit of this prayer of chapter 11, because we're going to focus on 12, which is the chapter on the way of devotion. But this way of devotion comes out of his experience of God. So it's beautiful. Chapter 11, he says, "In your mercy, you have shown me the secret supreme of your spirit, and your words have dispelled my delusion. I have heard in full from you of the coming and going of beings and also of your infinite greatness. I have heard your words of truth, but my soul is yearning to see your form as God of all this. If you think, O my Lord, that it can be seen by me, show me, O God of unity, the glory of your own supreme being. Reveal yourself to me. Make it real. I've heard about it. I sense it's true. Open my eyes that I can have a vision of truth, that I can know God as all that I'm seeing. Remove the veil." And Krishna says, see now the whole universe with all things that move and move not, and whatever your soul may yearn to see, see it all as one in me. Then we find in chapter 11 that Krishna gives Arjuna this vision of the divine presence in the entire universe with nothing left out, so that the vision of God includes the beautiful and the terrifying. It includes everything. Everything, everything is holy. Everything is of the One. This experience that Arjuna has of being able to see the One where there appears to be many, the One life, the One power, the One presence, is transforming for him. That takes us to this chapter that is the chapter of living in divine love. It is said that this is really the true test of spiritual experience. If we have spiritual insight, what determines whether it's really something of true spiritual significance is not the whoopee when it happens, but does it change us? Does it transform our character? And this is what we see with Arjuna, that his character is transformed. He no longer is seeking his own way, but he is seeking to live in harmony with the divine self. He becomes surrendered. His sense of personal will becomes surrendered to divine will. Remember in the beginning of the story when he says, I'm at my limit here. I don't know what to do. God, show me. And Krishna says, okay, this is what you do. And then he says, no. It's kind of how it is with us, isn't it? On the soul journey, we come to that place where we want to know, we want to grow in the spirit, we want to follow God's way, but we're not quite ready. It's like Augustine prayed, oh Lord, grant me continence, but not yet. We have this experience with Arjuna and moving through the vision, the direct experience of having God's presence revealed to him. His will is then transformed and he is ready to do the will of God. The rest of the Gita, the following six chapters, are about integrating this willingness into daily life. This vision that he has transforms his will. I think we can all relate to that. I want to pause for a moment just about that experience. First, I think prior to spiritual awakening of any kind, we are pretty wrapped up in self and self-will. We're just trying to succeed, or we're just trying to get by, or we're just trying to make do or find our way. And we're looking at the past and trying to project our best judgment onto the future. We're looking at others, what they do, and we're trying to figure out how we should do it. That's our point of reference. If we have some inkling of spiritual life, we might ask God for help with our plan. But it is about our plan at that level, right? And we don't really have a sense of what divine love would ask of us, or what the higher good is saying is the best choice, your best option that is going to be good for you and good for everyone around you. That's just what we call asleep. Then we begin to rouse from our sleep a bit through the grace of God and through our own turning to God, in which then our eyes are opened off and on. And we begin to be aware of higher calling prompting us to choose that which is going to be the greater good. Like Arjuna in the opening of the story, we sense this guidance in us. And it might be something as simple as a dietary choice. Got it right in front of us. Choice one, choice two. The higher self says, choice one. And we say, I'll take choice two. Even though we are aware, right? That goes on for a while until the will is transformed. And our will then is in harmony with divine will. That becomes automatic for us. That is what the transformation of the will looks like. First from being not aware, then to arguing with it, being at odds with our own higher true self, to being in surrendered full cooperation with the One. At this point, Arjuna is not looking for success or wealth or power, but he's looking for intimacy with the One. He's looking to follow love. So he is no more divided against himself. This chapter begins with a teaching about the fullness of God's love, of divine love. It begins with a teaching about how spirit is omnipresent and presses upon us for recognition, that there is this grace of spirit that is calling us all to awaken. The love that's revealed in chapter 12, that begins chapter 12, says, you know what? It doesn't really matter how you're looking. It just matters that you're looking. Spirit itself is going to reveal itself to you. We see in the teachings that open up chapter 12 that two main ways of seeking the divine are shown. And the first is that there are those who seek the divine through wisdom and through discernment, use of the intellect. They're looking at what is ultimate reality. They're not looking at personal God. They don't get that. They don't get singing to God, praying to God. They get God as spirit, transcendental, all-powerful, almighty, absolute presence. Then there are those who don't get that part. Seems too remote, too cold. They're looking for God on the ground. They're looking for God in everyone, God in every relationship, God everywhere you look. And so these are the paths, the path of wisdom, the path of love. Arjuna asks, well, which is best? And the Gita says, either one's good. However, the path of seeking knowledge of God as transcendental, absolute reality is the steep path, is the harder way, because human beings are in relationship and they're used to relationship. I find this particular teaching in the Gita to be a teaching of love itself that says, however you come is all right. There's a story I want to share with you from Rumi that underlines. So we see from another tradition now the beauty of this divine love that is calling us all. This is from the Essential Rumi, the translation by Coleman Barks. Moses and the Shepherd. Moses heard a shepherd on the road praying, God, where are you? I want to help you to fix your shoes and comb your hair. I want to wash your clothes and pick the lice off. I want to bring you milk, to kiss your little hands and feet when it's time for you to go to bed. I want to sweep your room and keep it neat. God, my sheep and my goats are yours. All I can say, remembering you, is Moses could stand it no longer. Who are you talking to? Well, the One who made us and who made the earth and the sky. Don't talk about shoes and socks with God. And what's with this, your little hands and feet? Such blasphemous familiarity sounds like you're chatting with your uncles. Use appropriate terms. Fatima is a fine name for a woman. But if you call a man Fatima, it's an insult. Body and birth, language are right for us on this side of the river, but not for addressing the origin, not for Allah. The shepherd repented and tore his clothes and sighed and wandered out into the desert. A sudden revelation then came to Moses, God's voice. Moses, you have separated me from one of my own. Did you come as a prophet to unite or to sever? I have given each being a separate and unique way of seeing and knowing and saying this knowledge. What seems wrong to you is right for him. What is poison to one is honey to someone else. Moses ran after the shepherd and caught up with him. I was wrong. God has revealed to me that there are no rules for worship. Say whatever and however your loving tells you to. Your sweet blasphemy is the truest devotion. Through you, a whole world is freed. Loosen your tongue and don't worry about what comes out. It's the light of the Spirit. The shepherd replied, Moses, Moses, I've now gone beyond even that. You applied the whip and my horse shied and jumped out of itself. The divine nature and my human nature came together. Bless your scolding hand and arm. I can't say what has happened. What I'm saying now is not my real condition. It can't be said. The shepherd grew quiet. When you eventually see through the veils to how things really are, you will keep saying again and again, this is certainly not like we thought it was. Such a beautiful story, because we see this revelation of divine love as we want to say Moses was wrong. But what happened? The further revelation of love. So the shepherd was on the path of love, and whatever happened just took him deeper on his path. You see? This is the teaching. This is the promise that all things work together for good for them that love God, for them who are called according to God's purpose. This is from Romans chapter 8, verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to God's purpose. When the restless, ego-driven mind has been stilled by the vision of divine unity, God in everyone, God in everything, we learn how to look. We learn how to see with the eyes of faith and to remember that God is always present. First, we are holding to that vision. And we have to look through conditions to affirm and to know that all is good even when we can't see it. Isn't that true? We have to look through and say, somewhere in there is good. I know it. I don't know how it's going to be revealed, but I know it. That is seeing with the eyes of faith. Then when we see with the eyes of faith, conditions themselves in our life begin to change. And why is that? because we have changed. We have transformed. Our heart and our minds have transformed, and we have become ourselves a clear instrument for God's love and God's peace. First, I think we just have glimpses, as if the presence of God steals a moment, steals a kiss, when we're hanging out in ordinary mind, doing our thing. We open ourselves. God comes in and steals a kiss to where we are elevated for a moment into that unity consciousness, into being aware that right where we are, sitting at our computer, standing at the kitchen sink, in a conversation with our boss, God has come in and stolen a kiss right in that moment. And we recognize, we remember the truth. God is all in all. God is always present. So it is that this experience moves from the background to the foreground, and to the background again, and to the foreground. Always it is present. Sometimes we are aware of it, and sometimes we are not. But it is our evenness of mind, our ability to stay anchored in knowing that God is our life, that helps us to be receptive to these moments, so we don't get so lost in ourselves and what we think we want. That's what the scripture basically says. This scripture is a description of a God-centered, awakened devotee who's living in the love and peace of God. And we can take that scripture as something to cultivate, as a state of consciousness, a state of mind to cultivate. But I want to say that this teaching is really a promise that as we cultivate the awareness of God's presence and this love of the One, we are transformed into this. It's natural. It becomes our natural inclination to fulfill this, because these are the qualities of our own soul. You see, we're not working to create ourselves as being spiritual. What we naturally are is being revealed. So let's take a look at the scripture. One who has no ill will toward any being, who is friendly and compassionate, free from egoism and self-sense, even-minded in pain and pleasure and patient, the yogi who is ever content, self-controlled, unshakable in determination, with mind and understanding given up to me, that one is dear to me. One from whom the world does not shrink, and who does not shrink from the world, and who is free from joy and anger, fear and agitation, that one too is dear to me. One who has no expectation, is pure, skillful in action, unconcerned and untroubled, who has given up all self-will in action, that one is dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor hates, neither grieves nor desires, and who has renounced good and evil, that one who is thus devoted is dear to me. One who behaves alike to foe and friend, also to good and evil repute, and who is alike in cold and heat, pleasure and pain, and who is free from attachment. One who holds equal blame and praise, who is restrained in speech, content with anything that comes, who has no fixed abode and is firm in mind, that one who is devoted is dear to me. But those who with faith, holding me as their supreme aim, follow the immortal wisdom, those devotees are exceedingly dear to me. We have in the last verse, which is the last verse in the chapter, that says that those who are devoted, who keep their attention, their life focused on God, and who act in accordance with that knowing, those are the ones who are exceedingly dear. I don't think that this dear means favorite, like, you know, the divine likes that group of people best. I think this dear means closest to, most like God. We are made in the image and likeness of God to be exceedingly like God in our living is to cultivate the awareness of God, and this is what the last verse says, to act in accordance with it. That is those two teachings that are essential for us on the spiritual path, to know that all things work together for good to those that love God. As I conclude this morning, I want to pose the question, is it possible to live in the moment-to-moment experience of our life, my life, your life, just as it is right now, and to affirm and to know that all things are working together for good, for your highest good? Can you hold that in your heart and in your mind to know that God in your life right now is bringing all things together for your highest good? Can we see the one in all, see all as the face of God, all experiences, all people, all circumstances, all of it? Can we see the face of God in it and know that all things are holy, all things are working together in the highest way? Let's conclude with an affirmation along these lines. You'll find the affirmation on the back of your study lesson. I'll say it first and you say it back with feeling. Divine love fills my heart and my mind.
Divine I
see the divine in all people and in all circumstances.
I see the divine in all people and all circumstances.
I am even-minded and can see through changing conditions to the all good that is ever present.
I am
I release any attachment to particular outcomes and know the highest good is always unfolding.
I release any attachment to particular outcomes and know the highest good is always unfolding.
Everyone and everything I encounter is holy.